Born in the pandemic era, thriving in the Zoom era, it's Resonance Rewind, sharing lessons from the creatives of yesteryear for the population of today.
They've taken control of most of Europe and Russia.
Merciful heaven, an invasion.
That's not all, Mr. President.
I take it that's where your big idea comes in.
Let me introduce you to the team.
We said we would end this war. Too many people have died. We can stop this. We need to utilize every metahuman we can.
Who've you got there, Wonder Woman?
I'm from the future.
It's not impossible.
Are you ready to end this war?
I thought you'd never ask.
Then, welcome to the team.
If this goes haywire, blame the new guy.
Turns out the Nazis are launching a surprise attack.
Then we stop them.
Mother of God. Ah, kid, you ain't seen nothing yet.
They marched on Poland, and we did nothing. And they kept marching. They've taken control of most of Europe and Russia. That's not all, Mr. President. He's been searching for ancient artifacts since 1933. You mean magical artifacts? Rex Tyler, Dinah Lance, Jay Garrick, Carter Hall, and Shakespeare. Five names that just could prove crucial in the latest edition of Resonance Rewind. Question is, we need heroes more than ever these days, it would seem, but are these the right heroes from World War II right the way through to the team up with Flash and Superman? Or is it Shakespeare? Well, the official line as far as IMDb take on Justice Society is relatively brief and terse and to the point. The Justice Society of America, a group of heroes aiding the Allies in World War II, acquire an ally from the future who sends them on an adventure that changes history. 84 minutes worth of DC wonderment. Jessica Burtis, from your safe abode in Ireland, Dublin, what did you make of this particular odyssey?
I enjoyed it. I
I think it was not as dark as I expected. I think with DC, I'm used to kind of their movies now being a bit dark, whereas Marvel tends to kind of be a bit more light and family friendly. But this surprised me. I really enjoyed this animated film. It's long enough that it has a lot of plot and characters, but it's not so long that you find yourself kind of wanting it to be over. And the animation I thought was just such a strong point of it because it is beautiful. The animation was stunning, especially in the combat scenes. The fights were so just satisfying to watch. They were just animated very well. And the folio in this movie, I don't know why I was so impressed with the sound effects. I think it was just like everything about this technically was very nice. And it was fun getting to see some characters I don't really see very much. We have like Wonder Woman and Superman, you know. And it was nice seeing a Flash. He's my favorite DC hero. So it was very, very nice to see him. I think my mom would love to watch this because she loves Aquaman, even though he is a bit more villainous in this. Not his fault, but, you know, not one of the good guys in this one.
Yeah. Now, it's particularly interesting you mentioned the music because Kevin Riepel, who is the composer, I think did a wonderful orchestral job. And again, it was well worked throughout the whole process. And I certainly think it was a well-crafted piece. And as you also rightly said, it was nice for once not to actually see the darkness of the Batman or indeed Superman's anxiety coming through. Obviously, Wonder Woman, one of the DC Holy Trinity, took center stage and I thought was very capably voiced by Stana Katic, who effectively gave the voice. I think she also managed to channel some nice Gal Gadot because, I mean, I'd seen Stana obviously
Yes.
perform in a number of things, but there was a Gal Gadot thing there. Matt Bomer, of course, portrayed your favourite Barry Allen. Or were you a classic Flash fan? Are you more a Jay Garrick fan as opposed to a Barry Allen Flash?
I'm used to Barry as the Flash, so Team Barry, but I think it's interesting with like so many of these heroes how they've gone through so many different iterations. And I think that this, like you were saying with Wonder Woman, how she channels like Gal Gadot in this. You definitely see that with like the sword and the shield. There's definitely like an allusion to the movie. It's inspired by some of the more recent films without, like you said, taking on that darkness. It's refreshing.
was obviously a movie which channeled aspects of Raiders of the Lost Ark as well, because clearly there's a reference to the fiendish leader who's never actually referred to, but we're presuming as head of the Nazi party, there's really only one person it could be. No, it's not Donald Trump. but it was effectively somebody who effectively was clearly looking to that. And the whole Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark thing, the Ark of the Covenant, the Lost Ark, the artifacts and so on, were being sought through. And that opening segue that we have using the old newsreel footage and the connection with President Roosevelt, of course, and his decision, the decision to be persuaded to actually use metahumans, and the delivery, of course, of Rex Tyler, our man, who I must admit, again, sort of familiar with, but not one of the leading lights of the DC universe. Black Canary, of course, Diana Lance and her sonic scream. Jay Garrick as the Flash, and of course Carter Hall as Hawkman in that scene, led, of course, by Wonder Woman. And then I thought an interesting way in which Shakespeare was worked into the whole path, the way in which we see this character of Shakespeare, we think, could it possibly be? But of course it is. It's another S that's actually there. And of course he doesn't switch to the S until they encounter Dr. Fate, and the whole way in which Fate can kind of bring the heroes together for good or ill on that basis. Did you have any, you cited the animation, etc. What about the actual heroes themselves? I mean, for people like, Black Canary, I think, is getting more popular now. She's had her place in the Arrowverse pretty much assured. And, of course, Legends of Tomorrow. Our Man, perhaps less so. Hawkman, I mean, I always think that the Hawkman costume is...
A bit much.
It's full on. Yeah. It's working through that. But, of course, we do see... you said it's a light movie. There are moments here which I think are quite, if not tragic, they certainly they have to confront mortality and the mortality of two leading lights as well.
Yeah, I do think it's like a movie where the superheroes, the whole cast of them, aren't entirely invincible. And anytime you have heroes like fighting other superpowered people, it kind of ups the risk in an interesting way. But it's also like, in this one, it's made interesting because, like with Aquaman and Wonder Woman, you like the characters both so much. You know, it's not easy to say there's like a good or bad guy in this situation. So I think it kind of is always interesting whenever you kind of see a hero uses a puppet, because you don't want them to have to use all their force they can to stop them, because you don't want to see your favorite hero die. but yeah, I think the characters are one of the most interesting things. I'm always like, Starfire is one of my favorite DC characters. She's always been my favorite. But I'm always like, whenever I see new heroes, I'm always like, I don't know. It takes me time to warm up to them. I'm so used to my favorites.
And that's part of the whole sort of rationale for them. I love some of the quotes that were being made within the whole system. I mean, Black Canary's line to Hawkman, life is dangerous. It shouldn't stop us from living it. Actually, that was actually Iris Allen and her sort of line, not Black Canary. It was Iris Allen who was saying that to Barry Rice at the start, with, of course, one of the, I suppose, almost cringeworthy lines. Superman, what can I do, says the Flash. Maybe some help with the tentacles. Because obviously that's useful in terms of, the tentacles. Because, I mean, we do have, in a sense, that other aspect, which I know some critics of this have actually said that that's one of the weaknesses of the movie, that it does cover an awful lot of ground. You have Brainiac, you have Superman, you have ostensibly our Earth, but the first time that the Flash will actually meet Superman and the talk about a team up and so on, and a reiteration of these two mythological figures, which clearly is foreshadowed by the Justice Society, foreshadowing the Justice League and other areas within that. Did you have a favourite villain of the piece? I mean, was it Brainiac, or was it indeed the fiendish mind controller of Aquaman from the depths of the ocean, etc.? Or was it indeed another?
I don't think any of the villains in this one were particular favourites of mine. I think Brainiac is interesting because I'm not used to seeing that character. I think I always liked the really kooky ones, like Mad Mod, or like the very intense ones, like Slade. Like, those are like the hallmarks of my favorites. But I think this is interesting. Like, anytime, I feel like World War II is like a very popular setting for a lot of superhero films. It's so many are set in World War II, because I think there's this element of like it was so bad of a conflict and so extreme that we kind of want to look at it like there has to be some superhuman element, or to kind of chalk it up to something bigger than humanity. So I think anytime you have like superpowered villains, they're automatically more interesting. But that also just makes savage Nazi soldiers like, are they more villainous, or like the superpowered people more? You know, it's kind of interesting.
Well, of course, it's also an homage to the origins of superheroes in general, because the golden age of DC and Marvel Comics was very much in that period from 1939 to 1945, 1946, where there were so many heroes that were being churned out. I mean, obviously, for DC, you had Wonder Woman, Batman, Green Lantern, Green Arrow, and the incarnations there. And Marvel, of course, not called Marvel in those days, but they were also bringing to bear people like Captain America and Jack Kirby and Stan Lee were obviously writing material like that, which obviously sort of impacted and were sort of taking on that basis. Very profitable, very lucrative franchises, which of course were reinvented and repackaged initially by DC towards the end of the 50s, and then of course by Marvel, and it's never really stopped from that point of view. What is it, Jessica, that you think actually makes these movies just so popular? Is it, as Grant Morrison has said, that actually we like the notion of epic tales? I mean, you weren't able to join us last week, but I might draw to bear your thoughts on Yellow Submarine, because that's also an odyssey. That's also a voyage. That's an animated motion picture, which obviously was just shot 20 years after the end of the Second World War and was revamped and repackaged together. Clearly, we have the Blue Meanies in that side. It's very much a fictional side of things there, plus Glove, plus the Nowhere Man, and anybody who doesn't get a lump in their throat when they think of Jeremy the Nowhere Man, I think has probably lost touch with their feelings. But in terms of, as I say, this desire that we have for the epic voyage and the journey, and there is a voyage here because the heroes, effectively, we first encounter them after they've been signed up. They're in the Second World War. They're obviously in Europe. They move from Europe to Bavaria, to the castle in Bavaria. From Bavaria, effectively, they go to the Bermuda Triangle, and then, of course, sadly, we can't be joined by Pama Sue Man, but we can see obviously New York once again, the battleground for the Atlanteans, effectively being an initial precursor of an invading land. I mean, how Coney Island survived, I just don't know, but it did.
It's so unfair. I feel like New York takes a beating in all of these superhero movies, quite honestly. But I like that idea of a journey, because I think that to tell a story is inherently human. I think that that's something that makes humanity humanity to me. And I think it's one of the most beautiful things, is that desire to tell stories. And from our earliest known written pieces, we have loved stories of something greater than life and something incredible, something that would like make you stop and just want to watch, like Gilgamesh, Beowulf, Homer. When you read these epic tales that have survived over time, it is these incredible superpowered people who are fighting forces that are also greater than life. And I feel like any time we have some big conflict, like a war or anything really destructive happening, like people kind of feel helpless and they feel like they can't do much to stop it themselves. And the idea of, well, if you had like the power to, like, what could you do? I think that's something that a lot of people want. I think a lot of us feel out of control of our lives or just with the world. You know, it's rough watching the news and you just feel like you can't really make a difference. But I think this idea of a superhero, this person who can stand for good and make a difference, this hero that'll go on a journey and the world would be better in the end because of it. I think that's something that a lot of people can kind of relate to.
The other advice that Superman first provides Flash with is, of course, don't get hit, avoid the beam, punch really hard, and save the day. Almost a kind of a simplicity in terms of that, but something which I think does connect. Again, another line which I thought was worth noting was Steve Trevor's line in the submarine to Diana Prince, obviously Wonder Woman: "You're just so beautiful when you're about to kick some Nazi butt or Nazi tail."
Romantic.
Not sort of about routine, and of course the classic line: "Sorry, I'm an American. We don't do surrender," which is interesting. I mean, I can see sort of an issue that could be done. I mean, there's a lot of patriotism here, clearly a lot of patriotism. And I think from that point of view, you know, the very name, the Justice Society of America, kind of carries with it that whole notion. So within that, did you feel as though the character of Shakespeare, the embedded war reporter, who we learn actually is actually Superman, but a Superman who hasn't grown up with Martha and Clark Kent, did you feel that he was effectively introduced? Because there is the sense that when Barry Allen's Flash has returned to his timeline or his Earth, because we're talking about the multiverse here, then actually on that basis alone, here you've got Superman obviously part of the Justice Society.
I do think, like, whenever it gets into parallel universes and things like that, I sometimes am just like, I'm not the biggest fan of, like, parallel universes. I think I'm just,
there are lots of them around, Jessica. I mean, we might be in a parallel universe today, basically.
So I think it's interesting that he wasn't, like, introduced as Superman throughout a lot of it. And I won't, the choice of the name Shakespeare is interesting in itself for Superman. I think that's interesting, kind of the story writer as Superman. But yeah, my dad especially is like very much a Superman traditionalist. Like, there is Superman and he is him, and so I feel like maybe he would like about the idea of Shakespeare.
And of course, he was wearing a mustache, which clearly was more effective than spectacles in terms of keeping his secret identity separate from that point of view. So, you know, clearly on that basis alone, it was nice to see the way in which you know, it was being portrayed. I've got to be honest and say I didn't really clock that it was Superman until the reveal of the slight S and the bag there. And there was obviously a slight giveaway insofar as he actually stands in front of the refugees or the villagers who are about to be mown down by the Nazis. And it looks as though he's going to be, but before, of course, the Flash effectively used the super speed to actually solve that particular problem as well from that angle. Yeah. Directed, of course, by Jeff Wamaster, who has had an interesting sort of career in terms of things that he's been involved with, certainly for animated routine. He's also been responsible for directing Batman, The Long Halloween Part 1, and the animated adventure of Guardians of the Galaxy television series. So he's clearly worked through that. Do you think that somehow superhero movies are better suited to animation, or would you prefer to see a live-action version of this?
I think it really depends. I do think that sometimes there's animated shows and they try to make them, especially with superheroes, they'll want to make the animated show into a live action and it just does not work. I think some shows are very much made for animation, and that's like the format. I feel like also animation hasn't totally been like always respected. So they're kind of like, oh, we need to make it like more serious, more respectable, make it live action. But I feel like animation's gaining an even greater appreciation. I think some films work excellent as animation and then others, they are perfect in live action. I think for this one, I preferred in animation because I think sometimes like if live action films can get too cluttered. And I like that this one we didn't have to worry about that because it was an animation.
Well, I know Robin Pierce wouldn't agree with this, but I think overall I prefer Justice League or Justice Society World War II to The Killing Joke. I felt The Killing Joke was a little bit too dark for me in many ways, particularly the sort of the way in which Barbara Gordon was actually acting in that part of you. Although maybe it's nip and tuck. Yeah. Maybe I just need to give another refreshment on that. What about favourite characters, Jessica? Who for you amongst the cast was the one sort of person that you said, yeah, this is the guy who gets it?
I think the Flash, of course, Barry Allen. I think he's just like, he's so good-hearted. He's not one of those like just emo
he's
superheroes
to
like
set
Batman.
Set the picnic table in the right spot for the sun. Yeah. He'll change the blanket until it gets there. He'll rush back and get some sun cream. He'll coordinate that. He's a bit too hyper at times. I think, you know, just chill out. You know, if the blanket isn't right for the picnic, you can sort something else out on that basis.
I think I can forgive him his little idiosyncrasies for just how like golden of a character he is. I love the non like. I feel like that's just why Batman isn't one of my favorites. He's just too intense about himself. I feel like Barry Allen just doesn't take himself seriously. I feel like that's necessary.
I mean, it may well be that obviously Barry has had his trauma, but not the trauma of losing parents, which again is very much put together as a Richard Reynolds characteristic of superheroes, that actually that trauma creates the legend and so on. So maybe there's a line within that. Mm-hmm. I've got to give thumbs up certainly to Dinah Lance as Black Canary. I thought that her approach was very effective. And again, I think that the way she interacted with Hawkman, and again, the demise of Hawkman, or this incarnation of Hawkman, the fourth incarnation, of course, Carter Hall, was also quite fascinating. And also, I mean, it was interesting, of course, that, and they did address this in the script, that Steve Trevor, from Barry Allen's point of view, you know, stalkerish much, if you're actually proposing to the same people, you know, day in, day out, same sort of line, etc. But of course, that I think addressed the sort of cultural issues of the time. And clearly, Steve Trevor completely smitten with Wonder Woman, and a kind of reciprocation, but not obviously until finally, of course, we see another tragic ending, which I suppose is, again, another significant fact about war, that war does, as indeed tragically we're seeing in Ukraine at present, it leads to people losing friends, family, and potential partners as well.
Yeah, I think having that where even the superheroes aren't safe, I think that is important, because I feel like it kind of helps remember, like brings them down to a bit of what the average people are kind of experiencing. And it does help you like also not get very relaxed. You understand that there is risk involved in what they're undertaking, and it gives their journey weight. Otherwise, it's just kind of like you don't have to worry at all. Consider it.
And that, of course, was one of the major criticisms that Alan Moore had, and indeed some of the early writers of Superman, for instance, which is why Kryptonite emerged out of a radio series of plays, because the writers effectively were saying, what can we do with this character? He can do everything, you know. So they actually created Kryptonite in the 1940s as radioactive shards of the planet Krypton, which effectively were problematic for Superman, to give him that jeopardy, to give him that sense of things can be difficult for him to actually cope with. And people who think it came straight from the comics, no, it was actually the radio incarnation that was responsible for Kryptonite and the world.
That is so interesting. I had no idea, but it makes total sense. Because yeah, what do you do to the man who can defeat everything?
Exactly. It's there. So there we are. Another Resonance Rewind factoid that hopefully will connect from the future as well. We may find out what Kathy Manso thinks about this. We may not. We just don't know. We'll see how things go. But I'm going to actually ask you at this stage, Jessica, for a score out of 10 for Justice Society of America, World War II.
I think I'm going to go pretty high on this. I think I'm giving it an 8.5, which makes me curious about what I gave Killing Joke, because I don't quite remember what I gave it. I know I liked it, but I don't remember exactly. So I'll have to compare.
And the beauty, of course, of the Resonance Rewind series is you can simply type in the episode into the southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com and instantly you'll be able to play back the whole thing. People could listen to the whole 120 shows so far and sort of work their way through that process. I don't actually have it to hand. I think I'm going to go for an 8 for this overall. I think I'll go from 8. It wasn't a perfect movie, and we have focused very much on animation, but I think it certainly had a lot of key points there. And I know critics gave it mixed feelings when it was released. It was obviously produced by the within the pandemic, so it was a pandemic year. 2021 was when it was launched upon the world, but I think it stands well, and I think it will stand the test of time as we sort of proceed within that. We've talked about time travel in this particular one. Next up, of course, we go back to the future, but not in Back to the Future style. We're actually going back to the year being 1987, when NASA launches its last deep space probe, piloted by Captain William Buck Rogers. It's Buck Rogers in the 25th century when he's frozen by forces beyond his ken and ends up in the planet Earth in the 25th century with a whole heap of other things, including relatively fresh, at least, from her role in Doc Savage, The Man of Bronze, Pamela Hensley, who portrays Princess Ardala. So that's to come as far as Resonance Rewind is concerned. Buck Rogers in the 25th century. Are you looking forward to that, Jessica?
I am. I'm very excited.
In the year 1987, at Cape Kennedy, NASA launched the last of America's deep space probes. Aboard this compact starship, a lone astronaut, Captain William Buck Rogers, was to experience cosmic forces beyond all comprehension. His trajectory was disrupted by an explosion. In the wink of an eye, his life support systems were frozen by temperatures beyond imagination. Ranger 3 was blown out of its planned trajectory. Buck was frozen by elements so instantaneous and perfect that he was fully preserved and living when found by the forces of the Draconian army and taken aboard the King's flagship Draconia.
Where am I?
We asked the questions. Who are you?
Captain Buck Rogers, United States Air Force. Who are you?
What did he say?
Something about a United States. Captain, what is your destination?
Who are you?
You were aboard the King's flagship Draconia, under command of the Royal Princess Ardala, on its way to Earth on a peace mission.
On its way to Earth? I mean, we're not on?
Oh. Give him something for his discomfort.
Oh. Are you a real-life princess?
I think we've given our captain a little too much medication.
No, I feel great.
And how are we this morning?
Great, where are we going?
We're going home.
Great, where's that?
On Earth.
All right.
I have the strangest feeling I'm going to see Captain Rogers again.
Houston Control, this is flight 711. Put down the backgammon boards and put away the cards. Lucky Buck is back.
My kind of town, Chicago is.
Practically a foreign language. Can it be some kind of joke?
Hey, baby, this is quite a setup.
It's Colonel Daring, Commander of Earth's Defenses. Take this barbarian in for interrogation.
Hey, wait a minute!
Captain Buck Rogers, you are now in the 25th century.
I think I will have that drink now.
To what planet? Oh, to Earth, of course. You returned as your mission required. To almost the precise landing area originally programmed into your ship.
Look, Doc. I've been through a lot. But there is no way you can tell me that that city out there is anything like Chicago.
No, it isn't. There's nothing like Chicago left on Earth.
Tell me about the Holocaust.
I can't. The Council will tell you in time.
Look, I lost everything that was important to me. My father, mother, brothers, sisters, a woman I cared for. And until I hear something that convinces me different, they're waiting for me somewhere in time and space right now.
By unanimous vote, the Council finds for the state. Captain Rogers, you and your representative, Councilor Theopolis, are banished from the inner cities. You will be removed to Anarchia, there to live out your lives as you see fit.
Well, I never thought I'd say this, but that place back there's starting to look good to me.
I wouldn't start feeling sorry for myself yet. This is nothing compared to what lies ahead.
Well, at least I know part of the story. Go, Twinkie. What brings you out on a night like this?
Captain, I came to find you at some personal risk.
Very ballsy.
Very what?
Welcome aboard the flagship Draconia.
Delighted. This is an unexpected pleasure.
I'm Colonel Deering, commander of the Third Force of the Earth Directorate, and I believe you already know Captain Rogers.
I don't believe we've had the pleasure.
I think you're mistaken, Princess. I never forget a knuckle.
Sir, excuse me. Are you familiar with rock?
No.
What are you doing?
It's called getting down. It's a little before your time. It frightens you.
Nothing frightens me.
All right, fine. Get down and boogie. It's expressive.
It's disgusting.
What happens if we bump together?
We automatically become man and wife.
If you're a spy, I'll have to kill you.
That's an example of your best pillow talk. I think I found your problem.
Explode.
That's impossible!
Alert all stations! Secure the ship!
Captain! You stay out of this!
Try and stop me! Watch out, Major, on your tail. Pull over, I'll get him.
keep on resonating.